Hi, I'm Sima Shapiro, the host of the new Contemporary Lifestyle Radio Show for Women Over 40, featuring everything about your health, wealth, children, happiness, and anything else of interest to you, the listener. Please stay tuned. Today we'll be talking with an international aid volunteer who found herself and her passion in working with vulnerable populations in developing countries. Deborah Quigley is a child protection advocate, a wife, a stepmother, and a new grandmother. During her 31-year airline career and now in retirement, Deborah has traveled the globe in her free time, either leading teams who hand-deliver humanitarian aid to orphanages, participating in teams responding to natural disasters, or escorting a healing child returning home after receiving medical care in the U.S. She is currently working with three international nonprofit, non-government organizations. So welcome, Deborah.
Hello, Sima.
So tell me a little bit about your journey to your present incarnation and your passion for all this international volunteer work.
I grew up in a family that volunteers, and my 85-year-old mother still volunteers 2 to 4 times a week. So it's kind of in our DNA a little bit like that. My first long-term commitment was Kapi'olani Children's Hospital here in Honolulu, the same hospital that President Obama was born in. I love spending time with the children, comforting them, feeding them, playing with them, but I had no idea that my time there was preparing me for what was to come next in my volunteer life.
So tell me more about the passion that grew in you and how you made a determination that this would be international as opposed to national, for example.
Airline people enjoy extensive travel and sort of fills that passion of mine for travel, and at the same time I can serve underserved populations in developing countries. So that's kind of my drive. And then I have had a very strong tug to do this kind of work for a long time, and it just is my drug of choice, I like to say.
And what is the drug for you? Who are you hoping to help or save or support?
I'm all about protecting children, and that children need to be given opportunities to know how to protect themselves because they can't always be protected. So through the three different organizations that I volunteer with, in some aspect, each one of them contributes to that need for child protection.
Tell me again about further groups that you worked with after you worked in Hawaii. Where did you go?
In my career in the airlines, I was seeking out some kind of group that was made up of airline employees where we could use our travel benefits and travel in groups to do this kind of work. And I found that through airline ambassadors in 1999 on a mission to the Philippines was my first trip, where we bring humanitarian aid and hand deliver it to the children themselves. And then I was in El Salvador responding to an earthquake that they had shortly after that, to refugee communities where they were living in an encampment because their homes were destroyed. That was pretty powerful to see that kind of community. We went to burn hospitals and letting people know that somebody cares and trying to fill their needs.
And then where did you go?
That took me to Vietnam and then to Cambodia, where I started leading groups myself. In Thailand and Cambodia, and then also the Philippines, I would lead groups of maybe 10 to 13. We would, like I said, hand deliver aid. Most of the time, it was like having a Christmas party every time we went to a new place.
This is such a fascinating topic, and I'm sure for the listener, this is one that most people just don't know about. They don't intersect this type of life. I mean, for many people, the fear of travel or the fine art of travel is sometimes enough for them to try to deal with rather than traveling to remote places, to places where there are indigenous people or there are catastrophes. So let's talk about, again, yourself and your own passion for this. Is there an art to getting into this type of life?
That's a very good question. An art, not in my journey. I've never seen the big picture. It's kind of funny because my husband's an architect, and he's always talking about seeing the big picture. You can't do this until you see the big picture.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never seen the big picture. I just respond to this compelling tug to reach out and reach out beyond my comfort zone to help others just one step at a time. And the path has revealed itself before me. So I'm like the blind, just taking that one step at a time to reveal a path it's worked for me, but it's not something that you can share with anybody because there is no vision. Mm-hmm. That doesn't help, does it?
No, I'm going to intricately work my way into your mind, heart, and soul. So there's where I'm going. When you do this type of work, do you know where you're going, say, months or a year in advance, or are you handed a number of possibilities based on a catastrophe, a dire need?
It depends on your connections. I had a number of connections in Cambodia, so it was comfortable for me. And then you create connections through your years in this kind of work, intersecting with other non-government, non-profit organizations. So with the airlines, you don't know if you're ever going to get there the day before you arrive. Sometimes you get stuck because of a cancellation or a diversion or other unpredictable situations. So we don't really plan that much in advance, like maybe a month or two, but definitely not a year. The members of your team are usually flight attendants, and they don't know their schedules till a month in advance. So it doesn't work like that. It's very fluid.
Mm-hmm. And do you often intersect with the same type of people or the same people?
That is the cool part about this kind of circle of volunteers. That I have an example of just recently, a woman sought me out from a post that I made on Facebook. And when we started talking, she was the missing link for a project that I'm trying to do in Guatemala, me and about five other organizations. So it was just amazing that she filled that missing link. And now we're moving forward with more assuredness that we can make this happen.
And do you personally have more of an affinity for certain countries as opposed to other countries where there might be a need? Or do you only go where there's a need and you're available?
I stretch myself to explore, you know, take advantage of opportunities where I can be of service. I do enjoy immensely going to Nepal, Guatemala, Cambodia. Those are kind of my returning trips over and over. And you'll meet people that have the same love for, I don't know, it's the countryside, the indigenous cultures, the kindness of the people. I did go to Haiti a number of times after the earthquake and established a close relationship and love for many Haitians that we worked with in tent camps and in a children's home. A lot of the children after the earthquake, a lot of the children that were abandoned were children with disabilities because the parents just couldn't take care of them anymore. So there was need for a children's home to take care of those with special needs. We made really good, loving friendships with many people in that situation.
Do you have any stats for me about number of people worldwide who do this or number of volunteers there are per year?
I don't. I know that airline ambassadors had maybe 3,000 members, but not all of them travel. Some of them are just supporters. I'm kind of surprised that there's not too many people out there that I know of that are from the airlines doing this kind of work. You'd think that this would be such a fantastic opportunity, but a lot of my friends just tap me on the back and think that I'm really wonderful. And I'm like, I'd like you to come with me. And some of them have. But they have other family commitments or things like that. So it's not lonely, but I tell people they wanted to know how you end up making connections, and I tell them you have to just show up. You have to have that trust or that faith that there will be that person that you're seeking if you just show up and be vulnerable to meeting new people and outreaching that way.
And how often do you travel a year?
Well, since last October, November, I think I traveled to 7 or 8 different countries. So I'm traveling at least on average, say, 10 days a month or more.
Mm-hmm. And are you ever afraid as a woman, and not only as a foreigner, but as a woman who is a foreigner, going into so many of these areas which are unsecured, especially if there's a catastrophe that's befallen the area?
Yes, I am aware, and I try to remind myself to be cautious, but to be honest, I believe that I don't have a choice. I personally don't have a choice, and my family knows this, that I'm out there because I have to be out there. And yes, there are dangers. Like, for instance, our team was in Dhaka, Bangladesh, in March, and our hotel was just 5 minutes away from that bakery where the 22 civilians were killed in July. So it really makes you sit up and pay attention. But it wouldn't stop me from, I mean, I'm not going to go someplace where there is imminent danger knowingly, but I can't stay home and just, you know, wait for the green light.
It feels like this is a calling for you. I sense the passion in your voice, and I am guessing there's a huge spiritual override. Is this what you bring to the table? And I guess even looking further, would this be how you'd like to be remembered?
Wow. Yes, anybody that knows me know this is what I do, and maybe that's because throughout the years, I've been doing this kind of work for 17 years now, and I think because of that, I do get people that are referred to me through friends or acquaintances that know this is the kind of work that I do. It just feeds me, and I, like I said, I don't think I have a choice, and not reluctantly by any means.
And other than really wanting to help children, for example, what else does it do for you?
Boy, it fulfills me in so many ways. I work with human trafficking now, and I've been involved with that since 2009. And this is a human rights crisis, and people may not think of it at home, but it's so invisible and unseen that it's easy to not see. But once you're aware of the issue and aware of indicators, everybody needs to be raising awareness amongst youth here in America and in other countries, because traffickers prey on the youth because they're more vulnerable, obviously. And I really believe that children need to know about this danger and know how to protect themselves, because so it's just such a horrendous crime that takes lives, and physically and spiritually.
Bless the beast and the children. For in this world they have no voice, they have no choice. Bless the beasts and the children.
We're talking today with an international aid volunteer who has found herself and her passion and her calling helping vulnerable populations in developing countries, but actually in many other countries around the world. Tell me a little bit about the three or so organizations you're involved with now.
So in 2011, I was in Cambodia, and I met people that were volunteering or working with a group called Friends International. They were organized in 1994 when three 20-something-year-olds responded to a concern about the growing numbers of children coming to the streets of Phnom Penh, for instance. And now they have grown to having outreach teams. They have reintegration into schools, finding children, reintegrating them back into their families if that's safe. It's just a fantastic organization, and I really believe in their message. So if you're going to a country that might have children that are begging on the streets, in a lot of the developing countries, it's very prevalent. Does the responsible traveler know how to respond to a begging children without putting them at further risk? And that's the message that I I don't work directly with the children because this organization is very protective of their clients, but I try to spread their message that I have it written down here, what their message is. Their message is buying directly from a child, like a child selling postcards, et cetera, or giving begging children and parents with infants money. It keeps them on the street and at great risk. And then I will add that it makes the trafficker's job easier. And we all know that is really a hard one to do, to not give anything to a child that's begging. So what you want to do when you go to these countries, when you go to a country in India or Nepal or Cambodia or Thailand where there's going to be begging children, you want to support the organizations that are supporting the children that are trying to get them off the streets, et cetera. So you have to do a little bit of your homework to be a responsible traveler.
This probably would be a lot harder than it seems, because I know for my own part, when I'm looking to give money to national charities or national nonprofit organizations, it becomes very complex trying to find out where your monies are going, whether or not they're rated highly, whether or not they're doing what they say they're doing. How would a person go about judging an international concern? And even more importantly, you know, thinking back to your Haiti example, there were innumerable organizations that flooded Haiti after their disaster. How would you have any idea which one was the best or which one would benefit them the most?
I tried to start a global case management kind of for different countries by just Googling, you know, street children organizations and making lists of who is connected with the government, if the government is corrupt or if the government is actually trying to help. And then there's groups like Child Helpline based in Amsterdam that manage helplines throughout the world for children to use those phones to call for help if they're in any kind of peril. It is difficult, but if you want to do what you want to contribute to helping a situation, then you have to do your due diligence and do some homework in advance. I'd love to have set that up, but it's quite time consuming to keep up with all the different organizations and what they're doing. But I, through my own pounding the pavement, so to speak, I have found those groups in the countries that I work in personally, so I can help support them so they can support the kids. But it is difficult, and I don't really have the answer. There's a number of search engines that grade nonprofit organizations according to their effectiveness, et cetera. Star Guide, and nonprofit organizations are constantly trying to work on being responsible when they're rated and graded.
Mm-hmm. Would I guess that you're paying for yourself to travel, or are you being flown? How does a person get to any of these areas?
Good question, Sima. I pay for everything myself. You can raise funds through family. You can raise funds through GoFundMe. If people know the kind of work you do, they want to contribute. They don't want to do the traveling themselves. They're happy that you're doing it for them because they care as much as you do, but they're not able to travel. And so people that volunteer, it's all volunteer. There's nothing reimbursed. If you work for a non-government organization or nonprofit, that's a different story. But as a volunteer, that's strictly it. It's kind of assumed within this community. But I kind of like that I pay for everything myself, and nobody has ever can ever question my motivation. Sometimes if something's paid for, it's like, well, they're going there because they're going on vacation or something like that. But that's not the case.
Mm-hmm. I'm guessing these trips don't feel like vacation.
No, but it's kind of funny. I was in Bolivia, and this one group of social workers, they wanted to know when we were coming back because they said, we have this we want to take you to, and this we want to take you to. And one of the flight attendants that was part of the group, she says, you know, I already have a job. So we try to keep a balance between the volunteer work and having a good experience and having a fun time.
Mm-hmm.
And having downtime to recoup and to review and to refresh your emotions, which can be quite drained sometimes.
I'm guessing being in the airline business, the world is your oyster. So you don't have to break through kind of American provincial attitudes yourself because you've been there and done that. But there must be some aspect of being an American that you can't get rid of when you're being faced with any number of different cultures, any number of differing situations. And I guess the other part of my question for this would be, do you feel part of the haves and that many of these people are the have-nots, even by virtue of the fact you're an American?
Yeah, you can't ignore that. It's just, you might as well have a blinking neon light on your head. You know, you just can't hide. So you have to just sort of know that everybody already thinks you're rich beyond rich, because in actuality you are rich if you're in any one of these countries. So I think humility is the number one asset that you'd want to play out for sure. And you definitely cannot be the ugly American and thinking that you know everything and being show off with your wealth. It's just so embarrassing and so hurtful. But I think in developing countries they're used to it, but that's the problem, is that the kids see what they don't have and they will do a lot of things that you don't want them to do to obtain, like a cell phone, and to be cool, even though it might cost them sometimes their life to do that kind of, to have that kind of possession. It's really hard.
And again, I guess I have to get back to the question of safety. You don't feel personally unsafe in these situations. We're talking about people who must be operating out of some primal instincts, especially if they've just been met with a disaster or a catastrophe.
Now that you say that, I mean, I'm grateful that I've never been physically attacked. When we were in El Salvador after the earthquake, there was a crowd that was, everybody wanted to come and have a piece of the aid that we're bringing, and it did get a little out of control, and it did cause a lot of us a lot of anxiety to see this unmanaged group, and it can quickly get out of control. So there are definitely safeguards that you want to keep in mind for everybody's safety, to make sure that you're in a safe location, that you can get out if you need to, because, like I said, things can get out of control.
Is that part of your planning, that you stay?
It has to be. If you're not familiar with that kind of danger, then it needs to be discussed before you go into that situation with everybody, to make sure that everybody's on the same page.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the other organizations you're currently working with?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked, because I have two other organizations that I'm so passionate about. This other organization is called Cause Vision, and it was founded by my friend who's a Japanese international journalist. She wanted to do something about raising awareness with underserved populations, or populations that don't have a lot of literacy opportunities. And she thought, gosh, I'm Japanese, and we do a lot of our education through comic books. So she started Cause Vision with working in, she did a comic book for Mexico City, then she did a comic book for Nepal. She writes simple stories that are easily told without a lot of words, and then she hires an illustrator who is a manga artist, and they depict her story with the cartoons, and then we get them printed in the destination country. And then we find, fortunately, there are organizations that we're working with in-country that will be distributing them, because obviously we don't speak the language. So it's been very fulfilling and exciting when we go to Cambodia, and then she did one for Vietnam and one for Thailand, one for Indonesia. Now she just finished a comic book for Colombia and Ecuador, and we're working on one in Malaysia and the Philippines, and hopefully next year we'll be doing one for Guatemala. So it's just a wonderful tool to open up a tough conversation with children, to help them, to try to encourage them to stay in school and to make good choices. They need to know that there's predators out there that are incredibly smooth and preying on these children. Yeah, it's just a wonderful tool to use for raising awareness. Mm-hmm. The other group that I volunteer with is called Days for Girls, and what we do is provide and distribute washable menstrual hygiene products along with women's health education, and our immediate focus is to serve communities where girls don't go to school during their period due to they can't either afford sanitary products or they're not available, like in villages in Africa and villages in Nepal and villages in India, where women actually end up using leaves, mattress stuffing, corn husk. Mm-hmm. It's hard to believe, but it's true. And a lot of these things cause infections, et cetera. So it's kind of been a wonderful world that in around 2011 or 2012, the conversation around menstrual hygiene management has been something that we can actually talk about amongst women, for instance. And I don't know about women and their mothers, but amongst women in your generation and then the younger generation, all over the world. So it's been an instrument to social change now in the world. And we're teaching girls now how to make their own products. So hopefully this will be contributing to the sustainable development goals that the United Nations set up for 2030. But we're actually hoping to reach a goal of every girl in 2022. I think it's kind of an ambitious goal, but I believe that it's doable with the passion from women groups that gather together to sew the kits.
Mm-hmm.
And then they pack the kits, and then they either send the kits or take the kits themselves to their destination country populations to distribute the kits amongst the girls. It's just an amazing, it's like not rocket science, you know, but it was a need that wasn't being addressed.
Well, that's a big need, actually.
Girls don't go to school during their period because
right.
they don't have the product. And then they get behind because they're missing a test. And then they get discouraged. And then they drop out. And then they're vulnerable to early marriage. And it just goes on from there. So girls all over the world have not had the opportunity to reach their full potential and be a contributing member of society with equality. It's just a huge contribution to changing the world.
Mm-hmm. What's your next trip?
My next trip is back to Nepal, where I'll be intersecting all three of these organizations through a number of friends and connections that I have there. With the comic books, there's one woman who works in the Sankhu Valley that is outside of Kathmandu, and she will be distributing comic books in some of the village schools. And then I'll be meeting with another friend from Australia who works or volunteers with Days for Girls, and we'll be visiting different micro enterprises, we call them, in the country, where they're sewing their own kits, trying to make their own enterprise where they can sell the products. And then also with Friends International, I have connections and friends that have worked with a program that works with street children for the past 20 years, and it's quite an established organization, and the children they work with they've even created theater groups where they go to schools and raise awareness about staying in school and making good choices. So it all fits together. It's really what brings me a lot of joy to see that kind of intersection happening.
We've been talking today with an international aid volunteer who works all over the world, helping vulnerable populations and also trying to help younger women and young girls with whatever they may need. I want to thank you so much, Deborah, for joining us today. You are an inspiration. It was my honor, and I hope that the listener has learned so much about not only volunteering, but the need for volunteers in this world.
Thank you, Sima, for giving me this opportunity.
I'm Sima Shapiro, your host of For Women Over 40. Thank you to the listener for joining us today.